Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 FY21 earnings conference call of Agrotech Foods Limited, hosted by Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vaishnavi Mandhaniya from Anand Rathi. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to Agrotech's Q2 FY21 earnings conference call. From the management, we have Mr. Sachin Gopal, the Managing Director, and Mr. Srinivas, the CFO. We'll begin the call with a brief discussion on the quarter, followed by the Q&A session. Mr. Sachin, thank you, and over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Vaishnavi, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking the time out to be with us today. And we appreciate it. As usual, we'll walk you through the business and the highlights of the P&L. We also have one set of questions which has come in advance, so I'll cover that off before we start the Q&A. So overall, very much clearly in the middle of the transformation of the company, we saw strong growth in the foods business, which is up, as you would have seen from our release, about 39% to about 96 crores of foods revenue for the quarter, right? Which is very good. In full year last year, we did about 255-260 in that ballpark. And this represented about 42% of total revenues in quarter two FY21. Also, very good was the gross margin. And gross margin, as you know, we refer to as net sales, less cost of goods, less primary trade, came in at about 33% of the foods business. So which means that it came in at about 30, 32-odd, 32-odd crores, which in turn was about 66% of the total gross margin that the company made of about 49 crores. So we were clearly, as we mentioned, impacted by significant price and commodity price increases on the edible oil business. But it's very good because overall, I think with the strong contribution of foods to our gross margin, that means the quality of our sale and the quality of our margin is becoming consistently better and better. Now, coming to the details, as you can see from the release, the total foods business grew in volume terms by about 38% in the quarter and in revenue terms by about 39%. And on a year-to-date basis, grew by about 28% in volume and about 29% in value. So there are a lot of moving parts here, so I'll try and give you our perspective on the growth. And then we will obviously, we will keep updating you in different calls as we go along. Of the year-to-date growth of about 29%, our assessment is that about 14% is our base growth, right? So as you know, if you look at the 10-year CAGR of our business, our foods business has been growing by about 14%-15%. So that is what we are treating as base growth. We're getting about 500 basis points of growth consistently from the new products that we launched last year. So that means the Act 2 Sweet Corn, chocolate spreads under Sunroff, breakfast cereals under Sunroff, and also the chocolate confectionery range that we just rolled out. So that would be a total of 19%. In other words, therefore, we believe that the COVID-related demand, as a consequence of whatever is happening currently with the pandemic, will represent the balance. That means about 10% or 1,000 basis points is currently there in our figures on account of COVID-related demand. Now, clearly, there are some parts of this COVID-related demand which will not stay, right? Because some parts of it are related to more people staying at home and in-home consumption. The good news, however, is that although we have a growth in the quarter of, if you will, 39% in the foods business, August was better than July, and September was better than August, right? So that means actually, and more and more people have actually started returning to a more active life. So that would mean also, we believe that there are some structural components which will remain. What share of that 39% is structural and what's there is temporary, even we won't be able to comment on right now. But certainly some amount is structural. And probably the reason for that is that as a consequence of the pandemic, we certainly restricted a lot of expenses, right? And you know, that is the first response when you're faced with a challenge of this kind. And although we had consistently said that this is the time we continue to invest in media, but we have been restrictive in almost all other expenses, right? All line items. A big part of it obviously is travel, right? And as a consequence, our media, as you would have read from the commentary, is up about 83%. And probably in terms of actual media time that we bought, we would have bought, as we still don't have the data for this September, but we would have bought close to what we bought in the entire year last year, right? So as you know, we have invested quite heavily over the last five odd years in expanding our distribution capabilities up from about 250,000 to about 400,000 stores. But as and when we saw edible oil margins coming under pressure, we have lowered media investments, you know, so that we could even manage the entire P&L. And probably there's a structural shift which is underway, which is with higher media spend, we are getting some amount of incremental growth, okay? So of the 39%, at this point in time, we can't tell you how much is due to that. But as we go forward, we should certainly be able to share with you. Our intention is to continue for the balance of the year to keep the first priority on media. We will continue to invest heavily on media at the same rate as what we are doing. And that should, over a period of one or two quarters, tell us therefore what was the incremental size or price that was there for us as we were investing heavily in distribution expansion, but not investing that heavily in media to support that distribution investment and therefore get the juice out of that, full juice out of that investment. And we'll be able to give a better perspective on it, okay? All right. Coming now to each of the individual foods businesses, ready-to-cook snacks, as you would have seen from our commentary, grew by about 60% in the quarter. So that's really a good growth. And sweet corn contributed off that to about 300 basis points, right? So the balance at this point in time would be popcorn because that's the total portfolio that we have in ready-to-cook snacks. Yeah. We did get a question in advance, and you know, which was saying, you know, what, you know, given the fact that we're facing this demand for the ready-to-cook category, are you looking at, you know, putting in new, if you will, products additionally under the category? We've been working on this for a while, but we will do it in a manner that, you know, we get our sources of competitive advantage and we define that. So don't expect us to suddenly jump into new categories because there's either a, you know, a big, a lot of noise about immunity or sanitation. I think the companies that are going to benefit from immunity and sanitation are the ones who are already there. They're certainly going to benefit, right, for some whatever period of time, right? Just as we are benefiting in popcorn. So it's not that we'll suddenly announce a slew of new launches and say, "Oh, by the way, you know what, ready-to-cook is now a big thing." No. Ready-to-cook is there, and we work within ready-to-cook. We've defined five different subcategories. There's popcorn, there's sweet corn, there's pasta, there's noodles, and there's soups. So we are already there in popcorn, and you know, sweet corn is scaling up very nicely. It's going to be a big pillar for our distribution expansion. And amongst the balance, which is pasta, noodles, and soup, we have no plans to enter soups at this point in time. Pasta and noodles have been under evaluation for us at some time, and we've been developing a portfolio so that we can play probably between the base level, entry-level products on this, and you know, the more sophisticated home delivery. But that's been work in progress for a while, and I think we'll be able to give you some more news about that as we progress through the year. So I hope that answers that question as well. On ready-to-eat snacks, I apologize. You can see that there's a clear improvement. We had told you, mentioned to you earlier that we made clear manufacturing choices in the first quarter in favor of ready-to-cook and peanut butter. With increased normalization of business and at our plant, fewer lockdowns, we have been able to improve the supply side on this, and we are therefore now down to at a -8% versus prior year. We also informed you that we had made some go-to-market changes, which is that all the 5 and 10 rupee snacks starting July 1st, actually, we've not been shipping into our depots, right? We have about 28 odd warehouses across the country, CNF agents, and those we have now put only on direct delivery to our distributors. And that's the model that the bottom end of the market works with. Most of the, if you will, the commodity players, commodity snacks players, they do that because there's not enough margin in the category, right? And we've executed that. And, you know, that's, I think, we've managed to execute it. And I would expect, therefore, that the trend is looking good and we should be able to come on par in quarter three and then, you know, get into growth thereafter. In terms of spreads, you can see the, it's pretty solid. It's very, very steady. Quarter four last year, we ended at about 24%, and that was after the last week of lockdown. Quarter one was obviously impacted by availability. Quarter two is 30%. So if you assume our run rate is in the region of about 25%, I think that really indicates that probably there were some positive, negative impacts of COVID, you know, with less people going to gym and outdoor activities, so on and so forth. But equally, there has been some increase in home consumption. I'm sure it would also be aided by our continued media presence. And therefore, you know, it looks like 24-25% looks like a reasonable growth rate, you know, for us to be able to track along. Of that, about 20% is coming from peanut butter, and about 400 to 500 basis points is coming from the chocolate spreads. We're doing very well on chocolate spreads. We have full competitive advantage, and we have a great product. It's very well priced, and we are fully able to leverage our distribution network that we have, and it's actually doing very well, right? So, For now, we will concentrate on peanut butter and chocolate spreads, and then later we'll see whether we would like to extend our presence in this category. But as we said before, we want to stay in products where there's value addition, there is process advantages. So we don't see ourselves entering, you know, more commoditized categories like honey, but we will certainly look within the category at additions, and we may even choose to expand our definition of spreads to be spreads and dips, right? But somewhere where, you know, we feel we can have competitive advantage, both in terms of product superiority, cost advantage, and obviously be able to leverage our brands. So that's the commentary on spreads. On cereals and confectionery, you can see here that they've contributed about 150 or basis points to our growth. We definitely deprioritized breakfast cereals in the first quarter in terms of our availability, and in fact maybe even parts of second quarter as well. However, we are now stepping up from an availability perspective. We have two plants now which are making breakfast cereals, both the Kothur plant and the Mangaldoi plant near Guwahati. And as Una comes on stream sometime in this quarter, Una will also start manufacturing it. So we'll have three plants actually for breakfast cereal. So we won't really have any supply side issues. And we expect to continue to grow our current offerings, which are the Pop Centerfield breakfast cereal, which is really an outstanding product, as also our granola, which is marketed as Honey Roast Oats. And we would be increasing the breadth of our offering within breakfast cereal in the current quarter itself. So starting December, you'll actually see two new introductions from us in the breakfast cereal space. At this point in time, we won't be able to tell you what that is, but the scaling up will happen. And we expect that therefore somewhere in the next 12 to 18 months, we can get this business up to a reasonable scale of 15 to 20 crores. And, you know, at that point in time, with a decent margin, it's something that can become an A&P grade business. But for now, our advertising resources, media resources, are fully devoted to ready-to-cook popcorn and peanut butter. I forgot to mention on the spread side, so let me add that before I forget. We did see two competitive entries in this quarter, in the months gone by, in the last 4 to 6 weeks, as expected. Hindustan Lever launched the Kisan peanut butter that is currently available in Tamil Nadu, Karnataka, Andhra, and Kerala. They've been on air since the 1st of October. So far, I think in the first 10 days, they spent about 1 crore and 10 lakhs. There are also media. So we will continue to track them. And obviously, we will also take whatever actions we need to take from a defensive mechanism standpoint. We also saw the launch of Amul Peanut Butter, which we had been expecting for a couple of years now. And so that is also in the market. So we see two new entrants. But we think that, you know, given the fact that we're in good shape, we have our plants, we are very competitively priced, we think that the moat is reasonable. Let's put it like that. All right. So on breakfast cereals, yeah, we covered that off. In terms of chocolate confectionery, we continue to learn as far as the category is concerned. This Diwali, we'll also be testing out a gift pack, so it will be in moderate quantities just to understand, you know, during the gifting season, how does it work. The gift pack actually also has our peanut butter and chocolate variant, right, which is still to be rolled out in the mass SKU. Distribution is going to be very limited, so it's highly unlikely that you'll get it, but if you see, you can buy it, and that's right. And but it's very nice. So I think over the next couple of months, we would have learned a lot about the chocolate business, and that for us will also be a good growth driver for next year, because obviously we would have built up a fairly sizable base as far as the ready-to-cook business is concerned in the current year, and we'll have need lots of growth drivers to be able to supplement that somewhat bigger base of the ready-to-cook business as we go forward into FY22. Not only from a revenue perspective, but also from a margin perspective. So there's a lot of work underway in the chocolate business on what we call PPA, product price architecture. We are working on that. We've ordered the necessary materials so that, you know, we have the right combination of weight, pricing, et cetera, et cetera. And we think that we are in good shape to be able to use this to get a good growth in revenue, and certainly revenue, and possibly in margin as well, as we start to absorb some of the overhead in the initial periods. All right. So I think I've covered all the new products also there. In terms of edible oils, the performance in quarter two is not very different, you know, from a top and revenue perspective, -10 and -6. We were working towards reducing the price premium to the bulk of the competition, right? We're at about 190, 200 rupees, and everybody's at about 130 thereabouts per liter. But we saw a huge increase in commodity prices. It's in the region of about 20%. And there were days actually when the sunflower oil, I think, reached almost like 120,000 rupees a ton. So pretty much the markets froze. What that means is everybody has to be cautious in how much, you know, you're willing to supply, because when the market prices go up, you can get a lot of growth, but then the margin becomes the challenge, right? So we've actually, we are assessing. It's still the commodity prices are still high as of today, right? So we've rolled back some of our promotions because, you know, this is the category which supplies us some a margin. Of course, the contribution to margin is less than what it was last year, and to that extent, our vulnerability is less. But still, every crore matters, right? So we are taking all the normal steps that we would to be able to protect gross margin, and also to be able to, you know, bolster our revenue growth to the extent possible. And in terms of Crystal, you can see the volume decline was 9%, right? And the value was up 6%. So that really represents, Crystal normally represents in pure terms, you know, that's the difference, right? I mean, you had a commodity price of maybe 18 to 20%, depending on when you booked the inventory into inward and when you sold it, or when your deals were done. You're going to get a swing in this particular case of 1500 basis points. The swing is less in the case of Sundrop, because in the case of Sundrop, while we operate the lower end on a cost plus basis, at the higher end, we had actually taken a decision to lower some prices, and the higher end doesn't move exactly on a cost plus basis, right? So we're already significantly premium. So that is why the gap between value and volume in the case of Sundrop is less than what it is in the case of Crystal. I think both Crystal and Sunrock did the parts of the portfolio which were consumed largely in out of home, the lower end, certainly saw some impact, and that's the reason for the lower volumes, nothing else. Okay. So overall, therefore, from a financial standpoint, net sales for the quarter were about 12% higher than prior year, largely driven by volume driven growth of about 39% in the foods business. And year-to-date September, our net sales growth is about 8% with a foods growth of 29%. excuse me. Quarter two gross margin on the foods business was higher by about 11 crores due to volume growth. This offset about an 11 crore decline in oil's gross margin due to about a 20% increase in input commodity costs across the edible oil portfolio, right? So we'll see how the edible oil piece goes, but certainly all looking good on the food side. Year to date, September, media was up by about 83%, helped by lower sales promotion expenses. And that really ensured continued media presence. So we continue to be on air. And as we said, we'll see by the end of the year what is the incremental growth that we're getting because of the higher media spend on the back of the distribution infrastructure that we've already built up. And if you will, probably we were not getting the full value of that because our media spend was lower. Profit before tax was up 14% on a year-to-date basis. It was obviously lower for the quarter because of the higher media investment that we had with virtually a flat gross margin, right? And on profit after tax is lower due to the deferred tax reversal. Obviously, in quarter two, you have the full impact of quarter one plus deferred tax. On a year-to-date basis, you have the impact of deferred tax reversal. In terms of all the other line items in the P&L, there's not a lot to report. So you can see that the employee expenses are pretty much in line. There'll be some amount of expenses on account of the clients where the people are on our rolls. But other than that, there's nothing. We've kept, administrative salaries absolutely flat. Depreciation is a little lower, and that's because of the longer life of assets that we've tested and executed, right? And other expenses are higher. There is some amount of increase for doubtful debts, right? Because of COVID, there are some impacts with some customers. We won't be able to tell you who. There's a little bit impact of that. There's obviously more processing charges because we pay our partners in the food business more processing charges, right? And there's some impact on trade and royalty as well. Okay. On the positive side, however, travel cost is a lot lower, so that goes to offset those visa hits. And a little bit more probably in manufacturing because of higher consumables, sanitation, so on and so forth, right? But all within a range. Okay. So with that, I think we come to the close of the commentary as far as the quarter and year to date is concerned. But before we go into Q&A, I just answered Mr. Sampath's other question. So he's requested that, plant costs have gone up by about 22 crore. We've actually capitalized that Chittoor plant, right? So Chittoor went on stream in late September, and we are gradually building it up because it's all being done on a remote basis. But we are happy that, we've been able to start the plant. It was very close, as you know, to commencement just when COVID started. And we want to have a safe startup. So Chittoor plant is really accounting for all the increase as far as plant is concerned. You also asked the question about capital work in progress. So yes, there are two big chunks of capital work in progress. There's about 30 crores odd that relates to the Unnao plant and another 25 odd crores which relates to the Jhagadia plant. Both of these will get capitalized in the current quarter. So you can expect that these parts will go away from our WIP. Some other parts will come in, but obviously they won't be of this scale. And the Unnao plant is really around the rebuilding of the plant post the fire. And the Jhagadia plant is on account of providing more infrastructure, more space for the plant to be able to handle our expansion there. Right? And I think I've already answered the question around ready to cook. So, ma'am, with that, I'm done from my side, and we have 35 minutes for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sachin Hemnani from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. I have a few questions, listing them together. Over the last decade, in the oil business, we were able to broadly manage our gross margins in oil business from competition and any input price cost escalation by maintaining our price volume index? Can you please share some color on why we couldn't manage this quarter? Next, in AGM, we have mentioned that since our food business is now self-sustainable, we are changing strategy from oil business by trying to bring down price gaps with competitors. What has been the result of that strategy? Next, also regarding discounting strategy in oil, isn't an everyday low price strategy better than promotional discount offers of one-on-one or something like that? The customer might wait for such discounts in future next time they are not around. And the last, a big concern for us investors is that with all the efforts we are doing to develop new categories, tomorrow some big competitor might come who create a similar product and outspend us and take market share. You yourself gave an example of Unilever, Kisan peanut butter and Amul peanut butter. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Sachin. So I think I would say as far as oil's gross margins are concerned, while we have by and large been able to hold, I think over a period of time, the overall margins as far as the category are concerned have undergone a compression. Okay, there's no doubt about that. And for that, all you need to do is you need to look at the consumer price of the different oils, of the different oil players over the last 5 years. And you will find actually that prices have almost been static, right, at about the 130 odd rupees price per liter, while actually input prices have gone up, right? So one of the reasons we always believed that we wanted to be a foods company and we didn't want to remain an edible oil company is that the moat in a category like edible oil is inherently much weaker than the moats that you create in a food business, right? So to give you a perspective, we used to have an edible oil business in the US, which we subsequently sold off, and the inherent gross margin that we used to make in that category was about 10%. Okay, so we have always believed that while we were able to increase our prices and we were able to take margins into the 25 or 30% range, we've always believed and accepted that this could not be held on to permanently and forever because the inherent category margins are that much lower, right? So I would say this quarter, probably, yes, we were trying to bring down prices and commodity prices went up, so we've done a little rollback. But per se, we don't believe that on a sustainable basis, the edible oils category can continue to give good margins of 30 to 35%. And that is the reason why we said from day one, right, when we started our journey of transformation, that we don't want to remain an edible oil company. We want to transform into a foods company, right? These are two very different businesses. For a moment, think, today our foods business, which is 96 crores in the quarter, 33% margin, it's a very nice business to invest in. We would like to have businesses which are investment grade, where you make 30% plus margin, because you know as you keep growing revenue, you are also going to get this margin improvement. As you get margin improvement, if you keep your costs well under control, it's all going to flow down through the bottom, to the bottom line, right? But that's not true for edible oils. My guess today is that in the edible oil portfolio, the margins today are ranging between 10 and 20%, right? In the portfolio across all the different brands. Because actually, if you see, there's also not much difference between the selling prices of multiple brands, right? And they're all good companies with good brands. But if, let's say, if you do a search, you'll find, you know, do a search for a brand like Fortune, available at about 120, 125 rupees a liter. Sapola, 130 to 135 rupees a liter, right? So these are all good brands, but they are all pegged in at that price point, right? So the edible oil category definitely doesn't have the moats that a good food business will have, right? And that is the reason why we have said from day one that we want to reduce our dependence. And it's good. I'm very glad that we've reached a point today where in a quarter, about 2/3 of our profit is coming from gross margin. I'd still like to have more from the oils, but, you know, it shows that the quality of the P&L has improved dramatically, right? As far as the AGM is concerned, absolutely right. And I talked about it a little earlier in this call as well. I said, we were endeavoring to do the price reduction. You could do it through everyday low price. You could do it through promotion. It doesn't really matter, right? Consumer at the end of the day is very smart. And increasingly, for example, if you go onto e-commerce sites actually it's all resolved. It comes to price per kilo. It's all there, right? Price per liter, price per kilo. So consumers figure it out, right? And you can have views like, say, you know, there are big customers in the US who say everyday low prices. So that's a conceptual philosophical debate, which I won't like be able to have in this call. But yes, as edible oil prices went up, therefore we did rollbacks. We have rolled back some of our promotions because automatically the gap is also getting lower, right? Competition will also have to increase. I'm not sure for how long they can continue to not increase prices, because they have to absorb then the margin impact, right? And there is a limit to which you can drive. You are willing to everybody has to, there has to be a limit to how much they are willing to compromise gross margin for revenue growth. Okay. As far as big competitors are concerned, I think we were more worried 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I think today is a different deal. Right? Today we have a distribution coverage in the region of about 4 lakh stores. We have our own manufacturing facilities, so we are very, very competitive in terms of our cost structure. So if you look at, say, Hindustan Lever, and, you know, they've entered with peanut butter, but on a price per gram, they're more expensive than us. Right? That's, you know, so that's saying, okay, that means, you know, we are absolute, and we are making a good margin. So that means, remember, we built our plant some years ago. We are operating it at a reasonable efficiency. I'm not saying perfect. I doubt that any one of us is ever perfect, right? But I think we are in very, very good shape to hold up against almost any player in any of the categories that we are competing in. Let me give you an example. Our center-filled breakfast cereal is not even advertised. But the product is so good, right? And we compete in that market with Kellogg and Nestle, who are both buying from third parties. Our product is so good that actually our main competitor in the category, is Kellogg, has walked away from advertising the product because our product is better. It's just that much better, right? Ditto in chocolates, right? Our offering as far as Centerfield chocolates is concerned is excellent, right? And I'm sure, you know, even our, as we test this gift pack and peanut butter chocolate. So, no, I would say we're not worried. Does that mean we shouldn't be... what do you call it? Cognizant? Of course we should be, right? I mean, and to an extent, one could argue we should worry. The only thing is we shouldn't worry that we won't be able to compete. I think we will be able to succeed, and we are succeeding actually very well. Okay? All right.
Thank you.
So that's it. Yeah, thank you, Sachin. All good questions, and ma'am, we'll get back to you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Karma from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, sir. Sir, I have a few questions, so I am listing down together. The first, sir, any color on how much of the branded growth could be attributable to channel inventory filling? The next, in terms of unique taste, how difficult would it be for the competitor to replicate or give a better taste for popcorn or peanut butter? How much is the switching cost we think we have for our products? Third, with the diversified product portfolio, are we spreading our marketing dollars to things? Can you share your thoughts of if instead of new launches, we spend more money on our existing products or scale them up? And the last, what has been the feedback from global parent Conagra on such a stupendous growth in branded food? Any thoughts of changing name to Conagra Food India or taking India as a core market going forward in international strategy? Or any such indication to show further commitment towards Indian market?
Yeah. Thank you, Kunal. So I'll take the questions one by one, and thank you to both you and Sachin for asking these questions in a compact manner. I really appreciate it. So in terms of, channel, there's certainly going to be some amount of inventory, right? Because, we didn't really ship, right, for the last week or 10 days of March, right? The only thing is, I think the impact of that inventory is coming down. Right? Because obviously, you know, if you take a week's inventory and you allocate it over a quarter, as a percentage of the quarter, it's much bigger than it is as a percentage of 6 months. Right? So, I would say the answer is yes. We would have, we've certainly increased distributor stocks between 1st of April and now. Right? But it won't be such a large share of the 96 odd crores. Right. So let me give you a rough figure. If I take 102, maybe it'll be in low single digit crores. very low single-digit growth, right? I'm just looking at the value of distributor inventory that we had on the 1st of April and what we would have ended September. So look at low single-digit growth, right? Okay. So a large part of the growth is really driven by the whole COVID piece. And as I said, how much of that is temporary and how much is structural, because we are now also spending much better behind the business, is something even we don't have the answer to. But we'll try and figure it out and, you know, give you the answers in the quarters to come. As far as popcorn and peanut butter is concerned, see, no business is, if you will, completely invincible. But I think we are in a good spot in both of these categories, as we are in many of the other products also now, right? And the reason is simple, right? We invested in our own plants. We have now got a reasonable degree of scale in these categories. And we are available at very good price points, right? You see, I was looking at the, with the team, I was looking at trying to understand why the chocolate category actually has underperformed all the other categories that we compete in over the last, 5 to 7 years, right? And one reason is clear, it's pricing. A lot of growth in India, volume growth, gets driven at between 250 and 300 rupees a kilo, right? So if you are available at that price point, it's very difficult for people to dislodge you, right? Because you already built up your plants, you already got the scale, right? But for them to enter at 250, 300 rupees a kilo means that, you know, they have to be willing to forego some profit in the initial period because they won't have the scale, right? So to give you a perspective, the ready-to-cook category, which we define as noodles, pasta, soup, sweet corn, and popcorn, grew by about 11% over the last, CAGR of 5-6 years. Chocolates grew at 5. Breakfast cereals have grown at 17. And breakfast cereals includes everything, oats, extruded, cornflakes, muesli, and granola. And spreads grew by about 20%. And that includes honey, chocolate spreads, jams and preserves, and nut and seed-based spreads, in which the fastest was actually nut and seed-based spreads and honey, both tracking at about close to 20%. Chocolate spreads actually grew slower. And that's, again, as you can say, one of the reasons why chocolate spreads actually as a category has grown slower than the others is pricing has been higher. So in India, if you have an offering in the range of about 250 to 300 rupees a kilo, you've now got scale, your manufacturing is streamlined, and you are making that 30-odd% margin or more, right? You are in a good spot. You're always going to be in a good spot. People can come in, but then, you know, they have to be willing to take losses for that period of time, okay? In terms of diversified portfolio, that's an important question. So, and I'll give you the, I'll recount a conversation to you which I had with our distributor in Bhubaneswar, who's also the Nestle distributor. And this was many years ago, maybe it's 8 years ago. And he said, you know, I wonder whether, you know, if Nestle could have had more growth in that period, had they deployed all their marketing dollars, if you will, on just driving Maggi rather than launching new products. And there is a merit in that argument, but not entirely, and I'll explain. You see, we are very focused. As we have said, our marketing dollars, our A&P resources, are all going behind ready-to-cook and popcorn and peanut butter. Right? These are our two horses, which are doing well, they're responding well, and we have strong moats and competitive positioning. This argument would have been valid that don't expand your portfolio too much if we were following the other approach, which I mentioned. So let's take, like, say, Kellogg's and Nestle, who bought Centerfield cereals from a party in Haryana. They are putting marketing dollars behind it, and now they are, it's a challenge because you have to make a choice. How much do I put on media behind my current product and how much on the new one? But we don't have to make those choices for two reasons. One, we're not spending media money on those categories till they get to a certain scale where they start to become self-funding, right? And two, we're not buying from outside because we are making all the products inside. And the more products we make from our plants, the more operating leverage that we get. Think for a moment, in the foods business this quarter, we have a 33% margin, right? If I add manufacturing cost on top of it, that means you're talking about, 47 odd percent in terms of gross contribution. Now, the more products, and this is about 300 basis points in the last year same quarter. So the more products we are able to push through, and I'm assuming that we make a little profit on those products, right? But even if we did, it would just absorb more overhead. It would give us scale in the manufacturing. It would give us scale in transportation, and it would give us scale with our distributors, right? We do top up our distributor margins, you know, at times with like subsidies, right? You know, to say, okay, you have so much turnover, you need to get this, etc. The top up that has also come down with scale, right? So scale is a big enabler, right? So the comment is absolutely right, but will hold true if we take resources out of peanut butter and popcorn and put them into the new products. We are neither doing that, nor do we have an intention of doing it, right? As and when they get money, it will be money which we believe is self-funded from their own earnings, okay? And lastly, as far as Conagra is concerned, honestly, I can't make any statements on their behalf, right? I think Conagra is doing exceedingly well in North America. It's a very, very successful business. They built up very strong moats in the frozen. You would have seen their results. And the company is very focused on North America, right? Which makes sense from their standpoint. So, but yes, as and when, you know, they change things, you'll get to know, I suppose, right? But, okay. All right. Thank you. And thank you, Kuna. And with that, ma'am, we'll go to the next question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. My first question is on Sundrop. So we have reduced our price premium versus the competition because that was not competitively sustainable. But despite that, our volume decline is still around 10%. So basically, if it is supposed to be a trade-off that I will make lesser margins, but my volumes will improve, so where is that positive part of that trade-off? That is point one. Point two is that, again, sorry to ask the same question, but on competition in peanut butter. So whenever there are new players in a nascent category where there is only one player, it's a positive to some extent because it helps in developing and growing the market. But on the other hand, it's a negative because obviously the market share of the incumbents fall. So in this trade-off again, where do you see yourself as a net impact of this trade-off? So sorry, both my questions are on trade-offs actually.
Okay, all right. So Percy, one day I hope you will lead with a foods question, right? And not an oil question, but hopefully we'll get you there in time. All right. okay. So on this, yes, you say absolutely right. See, our Sundrop oil business has components, okay? It has products at the high end, which are priced in the region of about 190 to 200 rupees. And we also have oils which are priced at close to 200 rupees. So actually, if you break it up, we did see the volume impact of much of the action that we've taken. And we got about a 9% growth on what we call our margin drivers, okay, in revenue, and about 11% in volume. So there was some impact of that, and that's starting to show through, right? The question is, remember, the role of the category is to provide us margin, right? And it's not a top-line driver because we have now got enough ammunition as far as the food business is concerned to give us good growth in revenue and profit, right? And it's at the bottom end, which is a comment that I made earlier, where there is out-of-home consumption because of the cheaper oils, there we have seen a significant decline. So that is why that's a net impact of both of them, okay? And as far as your point about peanut butter is concerned and the trade-offs there, let's see on how things are. So far, I think we've done, we are able to hold our own pretty well. And obviously, that doesn't mean, you know, that we shouldn't be careful. Hindustan Lever is a large company, right, with significant resources, a huge distribution strength, right, much more than us. But this is not the first time they launched peanut butter, okay? They launched peanut butter in 2007 under the Skippy brand name, which subsequently they, or 2006 probably, before we launched it certainly, and which subsequently they discontinued, right? So we'll see how it goes. And there are advantages to size, there are disadvantages to size also, as all of us who have worked in very large companies also know, right? So we'll have a look and we'll see. I think the important part is, from a consumer dimension, how are we placed? Are we offering good value to the consumer? are we spending enough behind our brands to be able to talk to the consumer, to communicate our message? Is our messaging correct? And do we have a great product? And if the answer on to all these four is yes, I think we would not be too worried. Okay, I would be worried if we didn't have a great product. I would be worried if we were significantly overpriced. I would certainly be worried. But those are positions that we've had time to be able to think through and place in a good dimension. Hmm? Okay, so thank you, thank you, thanks, thank you, Percy, for that question. And you know, ma'am, back to you. Hmm?
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhwanil Desai from Total Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kachin. I hope AgroTech team is safe and sound. So I'll list down all my questions together. First one is, so I think, and probably it's a naive question, so pardon me if it's a naive question, but, you know, when such kind of, you know, increasing input commodity prices happen, don't all players in the marketplace recalibrate their price? And hence, even with a lag, you know, the margins come back to near to the normal level, you know, over 3-6 months. That's my first question. Second question is, you know, I think in your opening remarks, you talked about the media spend part. And, you know, I've been tracking this company for the last 3 years. And you always maintain that our media spend will be a function of how much room we have in our P&L. However, this time, you know, to me, it sounded like that, you know, we will go for media spend, even if it means that we may have to do some kind of a trade-off on the P&L side. So is that impression correct? And if so, you know, what has changed? The third question is, you know, on the growth part. So, you know, we have been pretty clear on the food growth at 39%. And as you mentioned, the contribution of pipeline filling is very limited. So to that extent, and our, you know, ready-to-eat part is still on a degrowth mode. So, you know, even if we take out some kind of, you know, one-off impact of COVID, this still seem to be clocking in the range of 25-30%. So, why do you think that 25-30% growth, you know, is not sustainable on a food business? That's my third question.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Desai. So yeah, so I think on the prices of edible oil, you see, in any commodity, okay, and single commodity, if your entire business is only around a single commodity, you are always going to be vulnerable, particularly with low barriers to entry, because setting up an oil refinery is not a big deal, right? I don't know what the current cost is, but when we did the exercise some 10 years ago, it is about 12, 15 crores, something like that, right? So it's not a large investment, right? And so when you are in the business of selling only a single commodity, you are always going to be having less, if you will, pricing power. Okay? And that is the reason why several years ago we said, look, you know what? The oil business is good, but we have a window of time in which we have to transform this company from being an oils company into a foods company, right? And we've spent a reasonable amount of money in doing that. We've earned the money. We've taken up the pricing, but knowing the volume risks that were associated with it, okay, we were very cognizant of that, right? And because we fundamentally believe that the category will always have inherent pricing power and the black box is always going to be limited, right? And that has come true. So don't take my word for it. I think, you know, there is one of your guys, I think ISL, they used to be this young man, Samir Gupta, used to get his mail all the time. He used to put down all the consumer prices. Just ask the folks at ISL to give you a 5 or 10 year perspective on prices, consumer prices. You have a look at that. You know the commodity prices. You can pick them off the net and you do the math on whether in the edible oil market, overall margins have grown, have remained the same or have shrunk. Right? If you do the match, you'll have the answer to your question, which is kind of what I mentioned a little while ago. Okay. Remember, it is not that oil prices have not gone up on, say, something like palm oil. They have. Oil price. We use palm oil in our extensively in our business, in the food business. Every food company does. It's gone up on that also. But the point is, your product is not only palm oil. Your product is a combination of many products. And because of that, you also get natural hedging. right? So the more commodities you buy, the more you will get hedged, and the better will be, or the more stable and sustainable will be your margin growth. Okay, so that's one point. In terms of media spend, no, I think we remain committed to, you know, delivering profitable growth, and the P&L will always remain a critical parameter for us. But we did get room in the P&L. That's also a fact, right? We've got a reasonable amount of room because of COVID, right? We've cut all travel. We've, you know, the offices don't have electricity. We, even in the field, we've limited the number of days. So we've saved a lot of money, right? And that's given us room in the P&L. The moment we got the room in the P&L, we spent behind media, right? So which, and that's the reason why, as I mentioned, the number of what we get from the media houses, right, in terms of how much we spent, not how much we actually paid, because we got more efficiency, because we started very early in the pandemic. We've actually, as I said, spent in 6 months what we spent in the entire year last year. Spending as calculated by the third parties in terms of what that would have cost you attracting it, right? So we certainly, right? But I think this is good, because we are also getting into a stage that with a greater share of our gross margin coming from foods, we will be more sustainable, right? And, you know, therefore be able to have regular, but no, the P&L will always remain a priority. And at the end of the day, we are a commercial enterprise whose job is to grow revenue and profits in a sustainable, solid manner. All right. So no change in position as such. And, you know, on the 25% to 30% growth, you know, aapke muh mein ghee shakkar, we hope that, you know, everything that you say is true, and we should be able to get it. We had, as I mentioned to many of you earlier, our CAGR was about 1500 basis points, and we had said that with these new products, we'll cross the 20% mark. Maybe more. Our maths was showing about 1000 basis points, but we felt that at least 500 basis points would come, which has come in the first 5 months, more than 500 basis points. Have come from all the new products, right? And as we extend our product portfolio now, we fully leverage the network effects. You know, we always are clearly our endeavor would be how do we take that 20 to 30%, and obviously there'll be some benefit. As I said, the structural part of the whole COVID issue, as a consequence of raising the absolute level of our media spend, will also give us some points of growth. We are certainly seeing a lot more wholesale demand for the products. And, you know, we don't buy Nielsen, so we can't tell you, but I'm sure our indirect distribution has gone up in this period by a significant amount, right? At least that's the read that we have. It's possible that because we all are not traveling so much, that our direct coverage actually may not have, would certainly not have expanded, but may even have shrunk, because, you know, the level of supervision is not as high as it would be in the normal day. But that's okay. I think we are getting a great return, and we'll assess this model. So we are going to continue like this on this basis through till the end of this fiscal year. At which point in time, we'll report back to you and say, okay, you know, we think this is the structural benefit, this is the one time we get, and this is how we see the new year progressing, right? So thank you. Thank you for asking these questions. Okay, ma'am, I think we're good for the last question before we close the day.
Thank you. The last question is from the line of Shirish Pardesi from Centrum. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi Sachin and Srinivas. Good afternoon and thanks for the opportunity. So can I ask three questions? One is that now we have introduced 4 new categories, and you are banking on the distribution, and you have already shown that you are not now dependent only on edible oil, but food is now showing the respectable numbers in terms of top line and margins. If I take a 4-year perspective, 3 to 4 year perspective, which category you would expect, or out of these 4 new segments what you have launched, do you think which one will cross, say, 100 crore benchmark? The second question is, if you can touch upon what are the new manufacturing units which you are planning over next 1 year. And third is that on the spreads, again, it's a broader question, that if Lever has a muscle to distribute the product in the food outlet, how are we going to match up that distribution and defend our position in the market?
Right. Thank you, Shirish. Good to hear from you. So, you know what? Let me put it this way. each of these categories that we've launched in, all of them have the potential to be 100 crores. Otherwise, we wouldn't have launched them, right? Because we are not interested in businesses that are going to be, you know, 20, 30 crores, right? Those are not going to give us the mileage that we want in terms of being the kind of company that we want to be, right? So if you look at Sweetcorn, without a doubt, it has the potential to be 100 crores, right? It's doing exceedingly well. We're certainly not even keeping pace with demand right now. So, you know, we'll report back to you, but it has a nice unique space between frozen corn and fresh corn. And as you know, the country's frozen infrastructure is not very great. So there is a huge demand. It is kind of what I tell the folks in the field, what the small packs of Dabur honey are for Dabur, sweet corn has the potential to be for us. Because as you go down to smaller and smaller towns, there are times you're not going to get fresh sweet corn. You may not get it all through the year, depending on the part of the country you're in. And there won't be any frozen infrastructure. The capacity to be very good. But it also is very important for us. It's an important category to be the foundation for a lot of work in processed foods, right? We retort it. Retorting is very critical for food because either you retort it or you send it frozen, right? And once you get a good cost structure on retorted foods, there's a lot you can do in terms of your total portfolio, right? And most of the current players in retorted foods, they're focused only on overseas markets, right? Because, you know, they're focused on North America. In fact, companies like Mars and General Mills have full subsidiaries in India, right, who are doing only processed foods for North America. But we need to compete in India, have a great cost structure, which I think we are coming to. So once we've got that, it provides us a foundation to do a huge amount of work in the ready-to-cook area, right? In terms of, so all of them, ditto on chocolate spreads, ditto on breakfast cereals, ditto on chocolate confectionery. Of them, probably the largest category is chocolates, right? Chocolate is the largest category, right? Because if you look at the Euromonitor data, I think it's about 15,000 crores in 2019, right? Breakfast cereals is about 3,000 crores, spreads are about 3,000 crores, and sweet corn obviously is a small category. So, in terms of absolute size of category big, we just have to crack the formula. We think the niches that we've got in chocolates are very nice. Coconut, centerfield, peanut butter and chocolate, right? And these are large categories in other parts of the world. But we also need to see if we really want to explore the chocolate market, how can we get chocolates in the region of 250 to 300 rupees a kilo? That was the comment I was making earlier to say, you know, chocolates is a category that underperformed largely because of pricing. The same thing is true for chocolate spreads also. It's very difficult in India to build businesses at 500 and 1,000 rupees a kilo. You know, you may do it because it's there for historical reasons, but it's very difficult otherwise to build it. So you need to have good cost structures, give a good value to the consumer, and yet have a decent margin for yourself, which is what our endeavor is. Okay? And it's reflected in both peanut butter and popcorn. We have good value for money, good cost structures, and we have a good margin for ourselves. Okay? In terms of new manufacturing units over the next period. So basically, see, we've just started Chittu last month. So it is in early stages and we'll take it easy. We just don't want anything, you know, we want everything to go smoothly. Don't want to put undue pressure at a COVID time. And we'll ramp it up. Unnao will start sometime in Q3. And after that, we would, for the next 12 to 18 months at least, we are not going to be, or, you know, yeah, even more than that, because we are not starting work on the Calcutta factory at this point in time. We'll be focusing on getting more juice out of these factories. So we want to improve our terms out of these factories. Like, we've already made the investments. Now, how do we get more revenue and more profit from the plants that we've already set up, right? So you will not see CapEx at the same rate, if you will, that we have been spending for the last 4, 5, or 10 years. In the near term, it's going to be certainly less than what it was. Okay, and in terms of spreads, I think, you know, yes, we have to respect a company like HUL. You know, it's a big player, and we'll take it. We'll take it as it comes. But I think we're in pretty good shape. Okay, so as I said, I'd be very worried if we were overpriced. We didn't give a great product to our customers and consumers at great value, but we do, right? It's a, you know, Sunrock peanut butter is fantastic. It's an awesome product, right? And I'm not going to comment on the competitors' products. That wouldn't be appropriate, okay? So, yeah, that's it, Shirish. Thank you for asking the questions and good to have you. Okay, ma'am. Yeah,
thank you, Sachin. All the best.
Yeah, cheers, ma'am. Over to you. And, you know, it's 3 o'clock, so rationally we can close the meeting now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, That was the last question for today. On behalf of Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.